clause by clause, phrase by phrase. He laughed, alone in his apartment. Let them spend the next few months dissecting the document and then putting it back together again. Let them babble and quack at each other. In the end, they will accept something very close to this document, and I will see to it that the emergency clause is untouched. He clasped his hands together prayerfully and held them to his lips. This will make Morgenthau happy. I'll have the complete backing of the new morality and holy disciples and all the other believers scattered in among the population. They'll vote for this constitution. They'll make an effective block of votes that I can count on. If anything, they'll want to make it more restrictive than it is now. I can just see Wilmot and Urbain and the rest of the scientists debating against the believers. What a show that will make, entertainment for weeks to come. Once the constitution is enacted, the time will come to elect the Habitat's new leaders. No, not leaders, plural. There can be only one leader here, and that will be me. And once I am elected, it will be the time to clean house, the time to settle old scores, the time to make Morgenthau and those new morality prigs grovel at my feet.
As she walked back to her office, Holly didn't know whether she should feel disappointed or relieved. Actually, she felt some of both, and puzzled. Lunch with Manny had been pleasant, even fun. He didn't try to come on with me. Why? She asked herself. He was warm and friendly, but it was like a couple of nights ago never happened, like he has amnesia or something, just erased from his memory bank. Are all guys like that? Didn't it mean anything to him? She realized that it meant much more to her. And then there was Malcolm. Maybe it's better that Manny isn't really interested in me. He just had a fling with me, that's all. I shouldn't take it seriously. But he was so... She realized she was close to tears. Maybe I should talk to Don Diego about it, she thought. Then she shook her head. How could I tell him about it? I'd sound like a stupid dim-dum, or worse. But I've got to tell somebody. I need a friend, and he's the only real friend I have.
Kananga listened to Vyborg without saying a word, without nodding or gesturing or even blinking his eyes, it seemed. He walked alongside Vyborg in the dimmed light of evening, the lamps along their path making his shaved scalp gleam darkly, and listened so intently that Vyborg wondered if the man had gone mute. At last, Vyborg asked, "So what do you think can be done about it?" "Why do you come to me with this problem of yours?" Kananga asked quietly. Vyborg glowered at him. "Because you are a man of action. Because you wouldn't be aboard this Habitat if it weren't for me. I convinced the peacekeepers to allow you to immigrate. They wanted to put you on trial for genocide."
Kananga's dark face remained impassive, but the old fury welled up inside him once again. Genocide. The Hutu slaughtered us by the thousands, and no one lifted a finger. Yet when we seized power, when we repaid the Hutu in blood just as they had done to us, the peacekeepers come in with their satellite cameras and their laser weapons. They arrest us and put us on trial in the world court.
Misunderstanding the rage in Kananga's eyes, Vyborg said in a more conciliatory tone, "I need your help. No one else can do this for me. I need your strength and skill. Help me to get rid of this old man, please." The tall, lanky Rwandan took a deep, calming breath. Pointing a lean finger at one of the light poles at the side of the path they were walking along, he said softly, "That is a problem." Vyborg understood immediately. The cameras. Kananga nodded solemnly. "Morgenthau has even installed cameras in the apartments." "Yes, I know. Of course, if we do something in his apartment, I'm sure that we could get Morgenthau to suppress the video." "So we could take care of him in his apartment and no one would know," Vyborg said hopefully. "But what would we do with the body?" Kananga put the slightest of emphasis on the word "we," but Vyborg heard it and understood. "Make it look like an accident, a natural death. He's an old man. In excellent health, I checked his medical records. People die, Viborg snapped. With a low chuckle, Kananga said, Yes, especially when they have help. Feeling exasperation growing within him, Viborg demanded, Well, can you help me or not? Kananga was silent for so long that Viborg thought the man was going to refuse, but at last he said, There are no surveillance cameras down in the culverts where he spends so much of his time, are there? Viborg realized he was right.
Saturn arrival minus 328 days. All the department heads were seated around the oval conference table. Wilmot sat on one side, in the middle, flanked by urbane and round-faced, dark-haired Andrea Marinella, head of the Agro Group. Eberle, sitting exactly across the table from Wilmot, still thought of the woman as a glorified farmer. One by one, the department heads gave summaries of their weekly reports. Eberle felt utterly bored. Why doesn't Wilmot record one of these meetings and simply play it back each week, he wondered. It would save us all an hour or two, and the results would be just about the same. Well, that seems to be it, Wilmot said, once the last speaker had finished. Any new business? Eberle said, Raul Tavalera has accepted a position in the maintenance department. He's now working on repair and refurbishment assignments, so I'm told. Tamiko O'Malley, the stubby Japanese head of maintenance, nodded vigorously. He's not a half-bad technician, actually, although he really wants to get back to Earth as soon as possible. Wilmot turned his gaze back to Eberle. What about that, Dr. Eberle? We're making arrangements for him to leave with the video team once they finish their excursion to Titan. Urbane slapped his palm on the tabletop. They will not be allowed to land on Titan. Never, Eberle said mildly. Their team leader is under the impression that he will be allowed. Never, Urbane repeated, louder. Wilmot placed a soothing hand on the scientist's arm. I thought Dr. Cardenas was helping him solve the contamination problem. With nanomachines? Urbane snapped. I will believe that when I see it demonstrated, not before, Eberle said. It's going to be difficult to refuse him permission. I mean, this man Gaeta is a media hero. He rescued that injured astronaut. Everyone in the habitat respects him for that. Before Urbane could reply, Wilmot said, We must set up a demonstration of Dr. Cardenas's nanomachines. A demonstration that is done in complete safety. I don't want to take the slightest chance that nanobugs might run rampant in this habitat. Urbane nodded and smiled thinly. Zero risk, he murmured, and his smile told Eberle that he knew zero risk was an impossibility. Very well, said Wilmot. Are we finished, then? Several department heads started to push their chairs away from the table, but Eberle cleared his throat loudly and announced, There is one more item, if you please. Wilmot, halfway out of his chair, thumped down in it again, looking anything but pleased. What is it? He asked peevishly. My committee has drawn up a draft constitution. I've reviewed it, and now I think it's time for the people at large to see it and vote on adopting it. A flash of something like suspicion flickered in Wilmot's eyes. One of the department heads complained, You've already got everyone arguing about naming things, now you're going to start another debate? But Wilmot brushed his mustache with one finger and said, Let me see your draft document first. Then we'll have all the department heads review it. After that, we can show it to the people at large. Fine, said Eberle, with a gracious smile. It was exactly what he had expected Wilmot to do.
Several days later, Holly got up from her desk and walked to Morgenthau's door. She no longer thought of the office as Eberle's. She hadn't seen Eberle for many weeks, except for brief encounters, and then always with other people present. He doesn't care about me, she told herself, desperately hoping it wasn't true, wondering how she could make him care for her as much as she cared for him. She tapped at the door, and Morgenthau called, Enter! Holly slid the door back halfway and said, I'll be out of the office for the rest of the day. I'm going to... Morgenthau looked apprehensive, almost startled. Holly, I was going to tell you earlier, but it slipped my mind until this very moment.